even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And look at John Terry. That is real commitment to the cause.
John Terry is a proper wrong-in.
Would they or wouldn't they shake hands? That was the question fans were waiting to be answered as John Terry faced Wayne Bridge at Stamford Bridge.
The legendary Chelsea captain punches paps, hisses in pint glasses, and shags on motorway hard shoulders. This is the story of John Terry, captain, leader, bell end. Welcome back to The Upshot. I'm Jack. Zach is with us, as ever.
Hello, mate.
Hello. And we've brought in today, as witness for the defence, its resident Chelsea ultra, JP Lockwood.
Good morning, fellas. I am both looking forward to this episode and dreading it in equal measure.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kangaroo court. We've slightly made up our minds, but you can add some balance to this.
I think balance is a good word. I'm here for the defence.
I've got to be honest, guys, I woke up this morning with a spring in my step because this is a proper sordid one, and I like the sordid ones.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for a while. I do feel like we're going to drift into a relentless character assassination, but I'm glad that we have JP here for a bit of balance.
Yeah, I feel like there's a bit of there's an energy in the studio this morning.
Well, and it's not very rainbow rhythms. Yeah. It's not very pro JT.
This could be my last episode.
Yeah, well, as long as you put up a good case of the defence, you know, we haven't made up our minds yet.
Sure.
And actually, let's get this out of the way. John Terry is one of the greatest English defenders of all time. 500 appearances for Chelsea, led them to 5 Premier League titles, 5 FA Cups, Champions League, and he captained England. I think that's probably enough on the football.
Let's get into the good stuff.
Yeah, let's go. Zach, do you want to kick us off? Take us back.
Yeah. So we just take you back to the mid-90s when John Terry started out in the West Ham youth team. He moved to Chelsea when he was 14, but his whole family are West Ham fans. He said once that, I once scored a goal against West Ham. When I went to celebrate in front of their fans, I saw my uncle and father screaming and insulting me.
What, are they just like, you fucking cunt?
Yeah.
Famously, he never supported anyone growing up.
What? Oh, yeah.
He didn't have a favourite football team.
That's bollocks.
Actual real sociopath behaviour, isn't
he? He just had all of the jerseys of whoever was doing well at the time.
Okay, kind of fits my...
Yeah, oh, here we go, character assessment started.
So you're just waiting to slip it on to join the celebrations in the playground. Yeah.
Whoever wins. You must agree that's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Is that like, you know, I support Messi and Mbappe, teenagers now, or is it like...
I don't know, I mean, apparently, I know you said everyone was West Ham, but apparently his dad was a United fan as well.
Mm. Well, his dad was in the front row at Upton Park calling him a cunt.
Yeah. Bought a ticket especially.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't about his West Ham loyalty, he just hated him.
Yeah.
So Terry breaks into the Chelsea team in 1998, and this is pre-Abramovich, so not quite as glamorous as it became. But after he makes his Champions League debut, Terry gets a bonus and he goes out and buys this flashy new car, and he arrives the next day to training thinking like, all right, I'm one of the boys now, I can slip it in next to Marcel Desailly's Lamborghini. But Dennis Wise, the captain, spots him and finds him in the corridor and throttles him, like pins him to the wall and says, who do you think you are? Go and take that car back now. And so he's basically saying, like, don't get ahead of yourself, son. Like,
yeah.
you've just broken into the team.
Like, you're not allowed to have a car. Was it a really expensive car?
I think it was a flashy one.
Yeah.
But Terry, he takes it back to the shop. He says he lost a load of money on it, but...
Didn't Dennis Wise then go and like help him choose his first house?
Yeah, I did hear that. So I think Dennis Wise was sort of looking out for him and trying to make sure he doesn't get too ahead of himself and
just being a bit of a horrible cunt. Yeah, a benevolent despot.
Yeah. But maybe how Dennis Wise was with him, you know, that sort of like absolute control freak, take your car back, I'm picking your first house, he then took on.
As when he became captain.
Yeah.
Do you think did he have that role with...
I think so. He was just all-encompassing,
yeah,
complete control freak.
Ancelotti said he never heard a single player taking the piss out of Terry in the dressing room.
Yeah,
they were just scared of him.
Mm.
Or maybe because they liked him so much.
Or could he just not take a joke?
Yeah, he strikes me as the kind of guy, dish it out, but can't take it. I don't know what that's based on. That might be unfair.
Yeah. Anyway, if Terry got a lesson in humility from Dennis Wise, it didn't last too long in the memory. So... September 11th, 2001, planes crash into the Twin Towers, terrible tragedy, and the whole world is watching on in stunned silence, and the Chelsea players, obviously, are among them. So Lampard says in his autobiography, "We left the training ground immediately and spent the rest of the day in a horrified trance, watching the news channels and trying to comprehend what was going on." Fortunately, they got over it pretty quickly. So... the following day, Chelsea are scheduled to be playing Levski Sofia in the UEFA Cup, but the match gets cancelled as a mark of respect. So the players decide to go out and have a little lunch and enjoy their day off. And they start out at this pub. The whole team are there and just, you know, have a couple of beers, but it's quite restrained. So they all head home after that, apart from John Terry, Frank Lampard, Idiger Johnson, Jodie Morris. And they're later joined by Leicester's Frank Sinclair. It's a funny group, but...
Who should we get in?
Us, the boys.
So they head out on a pretty riotous pub crawl. So the papers describe it as an astonishing five-hour booze-fueled rampage. So they go through a string of... like suburban pubs around the Chelsea training ground, and they're just causing chaos, basically. So in the first pub that they go to, one customer recalls, they were all hurling abuse at people and chucking things at the landlord. Gudjonsson was hammered and shouting swear words, and Lampard, Morris and Sinclair urinated in a bin in the street.
It's middle of the day.
Just after lunch. They then move on to another pub where, according to another punter, they started throwing peanuts. When they got outside, they stripped one other lad who was with them and left him naked at a bus stop.
Stag do.
So this continues for quite a few hours. They get kicked out of basically every pub that they can go into, and they eventually end up at Heathrow's Holiday Inn.
Which, as you do.
Depressing enough place to end a
bender. Why would you ever go there on a bender?
Yeah, depressing enough. But at this point, Heathrow's Holiday Inn is filled with grieving American tourists who are stranded in London because all of the flights were cancelled. So the hotel bar is filled with these Americans sort of trying to watch on TV what's going on, get updates from their families back home. And suddenly the Chelsea players arrive, John Terry and co., and they start causing havoc in the bar. They're like necking drinks. At some point they decide to strip, so they're there in their underwear. One of them starts flashing his knob at customers in the restaurant. God. Another quote from somebody else who was in the hotel at the time. One of the players downed a pint of lager and then vomited it back up all over the floor.
Lovely.
You can just imagine these American tourists trying to watch like BBC News 24 to, yeah, to get some
George
updates
Bush's
on what's going
speech.
On. Somebody's throwing up on the floor beside them.
Do you think they've just completely forgotten about the 9/11 dynamic?
I would like to think so. I mean, if it's probably worse if they've not.
Yeah.
Either they've forgotten or they don't give a shit.
Yeah. It's not top of mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They eventually get kicked out of Holiday Inn as well.
Tragic.
In the words of the hotel manager, they were terrifying the customers. But that's not the end of it. So they then head next door to Air Bowl, I'm sure you're familiar with. He throws on-site bowling alley.
Is that one? Yeah. Bowling alley.
Yeah. I don't know who goes bowling.
That is good to know next time you're delayed.
Yeah, pre-flight.
Yeah. True. There they, according to reports, they send the other bowlers scattering when they slide.
Or just anyone who sees them run. Yes, just,
people are fleeing. This fleeing Heathrow's on-site bowling alley. They start throwing themselves headfirst down the lanes. One of the staff there says Sinclair almost had his head chopped off by the mechanism.
I read that. What the hell?
Well, because he's like gone down the lane, put his head in it.
He's all the way through.
That'd be a weird way to go.
Yeah.
Also, can you imagine if we're in that bowling alley and people are like, so where were you on 9/11? You'll always remember it. And you'd be like, I was at Air Bowl. I saw Scott Sinclair nearly lose his head.
Yeah, I wonder if it was busy that day.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to be doing on any day, let alone.
Well, I think
there
it
were
might
no
be.
Flights, were there?
Exactly.
Why
are
you at the
Air Bowl? So Air Bowl was probably really busy.
What's from true. People who are stranded?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just looking, take my mind off it with a relaxing game of Tempin.
Although it's knocking over a tool thing, the appropriate thing to be doing the day after.
For me, that was the more disgraceful statement, was the people who are bowling.
Yeah. Inappropriate anyway. But word obviously gets out, the papers get hold of this story, and there's a big front page splash. Chelsea haul them in, the players are all fined 2 weeks' wages, and they have to issue this grovelling apology.
Wasn't the front page headline was just sickening?
Sickening, yeah.
I've got to be honest, it wasn't the most sickening thing that deserves to be on the front page.
Exactly,
that week.
Yeah.
It's September 12th. Have you not got a better story for the front page?
Was that the Sun by any chance?
I think it was the Scrooge, wasn't it? News of the World.
Was
or
it?
Mail or something like that.
Yeah, one of those
bloody
same,
jokes. Aren't they? I mean, it was really out of order. I just mean there were more sickening details to put on front pages. But also pretty bad taste from them.
Yeah. So they apologise for this, and you know they're in the bad books for a while. But Terry is back in trouble again in a nightclub incident. So he gets kicked out when he's caught on CCTV pissing in a pint glass and leaving it on the dance floor.
Isn't he... The account of this I've read in the past is that he stood on the bar and picked up someone's drink and pissed in it.
Oh yeah.
I don't think the person drank it or anything, but he was standing on the bar, so he's like above everyone. And I think I heard it happen more than once. That might not be true.
Oh, really? Because
it was a party trick.
That doesn't quite match with his explanation of it, which is that he couldn't make it to the toilet because he had an injured toe.
as well.
which would slightly, you know, cast some doubts on that excuse when you see him clambering onto the bar.
He's on top of the bar.
Yeah,
that often gets described as his party trick, but I don't know if it was just that one time.
It's not much of a party trick, is it?
What, pissing?
Most people could probably do that.
Yeah, it's not that impressive.
Yeah,
but yeah, the CCTV's been lost, hasn't it?
Unfortunately,
I've had a
look so, yeah.
Real shame.
Yeah, if anyone has it, then please
get in touch. Contact at upshot.email.
But despite all of these indiscretions, when Jose Mourinho arrives at Stamford Bridge in 2004, he appoints John Terry captain. So he's obviously seen something there. He's a great, great role model and leader, clearly.
Mm. Any man who can fight through the pain of a broken toe to get on a bar.
Yeah, exactly.
And still pissed.
But this decision is vindicated. So that season, Jose's first, Chelsea win the Premier League. They do it in record-breaking fashion.
They
do. It's the best defensive record in Football League history. Most clean sheets. It was also at that point the highest points total anyone had ever got in the Premier League. I think Man City beat it now, but at the time it was.
Didn't they only concede 9 goals?
Yeah, it was crazy. I don't know whether we'd signed Ashley Cole by then. I can't remember. But I know it was Carvalho, Cech.
I don't think you had. Terry, Wayne Bridge would be
And Wayne Bridge, yeah.
Yeah, Terry was Premier League Player of the Season as well.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Although Carvalho gets a Ballon d'Or nomination and Terry doesn't.
Oh, really?
Not that season. Maybe the one after he does.
Was this the one where Jamie Carragher came joint 18th with Cristiano Ronaldo?
I think Terry is nominated that season higher than Carragher, actually, but it's the season after. Yeah. There you go. There's some football for you, JP.
That's time. Thanks, lads.
Fucking happy with that? Right.
That's enough football. Back to the slating.
So, yeah, look, the 2004-05 season, it was a very glorious one for John Terry on the pitch. And off it, he unwound by going on the mother of all shagging sprees. So in this one 12-month period, 2004 and 5, he is the subject of 8 different tabloid kiss and tells.
8?
So that's one every 6 weeks, basically. Yeah. And he's got a girlfriend, the lovely Tony, his future wife at this point, but that ain't stopping him. Anyway, in the interests of, you know, public interest journalism, I've been going through the tabloid archives. I've read all the kiss and tells, and I've picked out 5 favourites. I guess they are in an order, actually.
Jack's top 5.
I'm counting down from number 5. So, number 5, Jane Connery. So Jane Connery was a VIP hostess at Heathrow, which turns out...
They seem to like airports.
At Heathrow, did they meet on the bender? Was it,
was it at Air Bowl?
They met at Heathrow. Mario Melchiot was chatting her up, but she was more into Terry, and she gets his number.
After she saw him sliding headfirst down the bend at Air Bowl. You're the one for me.
The moment I saw you waving your knob at some grieving tourists, I just thought, that's my man. She does say he's very charming. So actually, she was working... You know those things in airports where you can win a car?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, you like, it's like a raffle. She was working in one of them.
Of course, John Terry.
She does bear a striking resemblance to John's mum, Sue. I'm just showing Zach and JP a picture. Don't you think?
Yes.
She does.
I'll drop a link to that in the show notes. Anyway, so they meet at Heathrow and they begin a 5-month affair. And Jane says she thought he was single. Apparently his MO is he would come around and he'd nip out to walk his dog, Munster, and then he'd go around to Jane's in Buckinghamshire. He lives in Cobham, so it's got a long dog walk, but the girlfriend bought it. Jane does give him very good reviews. She says, John was an incredible, insatiable lover and possibly the best I've ever had. He was certainly the most well-endowed and very proud of his huge manhood. So, I mean, it's been at least 3 weeks since we talked about the size of a footballer's cock on this pod, but it is a running theme in the kiss and tells. They all say he's very good in bed and he's got a huge knob. So,
and a hell of a centre back.
Yeah, and only let in 9 goals in that season, 2004-05. Great captain too. Jane's quite complimentary. She says she had no idea he had a girlfriend, and when she finds out, she's horrified. Jane later goes out with none other than Sven-Goran Eriksson, who cheats on her with Ulrika Johnson. And she sells her story too. But in fairness, every time she sells her story, she says it was, or the paper says it was for charity. The money goes to charity. So
interesting sort of pick between John and Sven-Goran Eriksson.
Sven has a bit of overlap with a few people, doesn't he? I'm trying to think of another one.
I can imagine them being quite different in bed.
Yeah. Oh, Sven has an overlap with Steve McLaren with another woman.
Really?
We'll cover that on a Sven episode when we get to it. But yeah, I mean, Sven's a big shagger.
Is he?
John's a big shagger. Oh, Sven's a massive shagger, mate. Oh, yeah. Anyway, Jane also goes on to set up Spouse Investigation Services, which is a sort of service if you suspect your man's cheating. She'll go and chat him up and ask him if he's single and then report back.
So. Was she? Because she can spot it well now.
Yeah, she knows her way around.
Was she just compiling a dossier of the big shaggers?
Yeah, I think it was all research, really.
If your husband is going on regular dog walks,
it's a Buckinghamshire area. Yeah.
It is highly likely they are having you off.
All right, counting down. Number 4 favorite kiss and tell is Alicia Duval, who is a glamour model who had 15 boob jobs, getting to an impressive size 30G, which is, that's quite an unusual pairing of proportions, I think. I picked this one just because it gives a bit of an insight into John Terry and also footballers' sort of chat-up lines. So Alicia says she was in a nightclub. The other footballers were blanking her because she'd like slept with one of them before, but John calls her over and he says, "I called you over because you got really nice boobs." And then he tells her, "You're the best-looking girl in here," puts a cocktail stirrer down her cleavage, and then asks her to have a threesome in the loos with another girl, which they do. And they also shag in his Range Rover, which you'll see is a running theme in these hookups. Alicia also gives a bit of a glimpse of the horrible world of like footballers chatting up girls. So she says, "When it comes to chat up, footballers speak a different language. Other men might pay you a compliment, but a footballer will say something like, 'My cock is so hard.'" And she said, "Yeah, they'll feed you lines about how they've stopped sleeping with their life or don't love them. They'll talk to you for 10 minutes. And if you haven't pulled by then, they lose interest." So it's quite transactional stuff. At least John complimented her boobs.
Yeah. I like that was what did it for her.
Yeah.
Just like, well, I called you over so nice.
Yeah, I think he just had a bit of kindness where the others are being like, "My cock's hard." He's just like, "Be a bit nice." I do think, again, in these kiss and tells, a running theme is he's quite a charming guy. I don't know if that, like, always comes across, But people who know him really get on with him and like him till he betrays them. But quite often, that seems to be a theme.
I always think in his interviews, he comes across as really charming and caring almost.
Are you thinking of the big boob chat up? Yeah. He's just so caring. The way he put that cocktail stirrer down my cleavage.
My Chelsea bias is coming out, lads.
I think he's got charm. But I mean, yeah.
He always, I think, because he's quite like softly spoken, he seems quite gentle.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, which doesn't tally with some of the stories you hear.
All right, well, speaking of gentle, number three on the Kiss and Tells list is the excellently named Shalimar Wimble. Shalimar tells two really great stories. The first is that John took her in his car to the M25 and pulled over on the hard shoulder near Junction 9, which is where you get off for the A3, if you're familiar. And they shag on the hard shoulder. And she said John really got off on the idea of other traffic just passing by.
Oh, you would.
Yeah, it's quite a mental place to do it. Are you really meant to just sit in the car on the
hard shoulder?
You're
not supposed to shag on the hard shoulder.
You're not supposed to. You're supposed to do it. Is that what that's for?
hard shoulder.
I was going to say, you're not meant to stay in the car, though, are you, if you're on the hard shoulder?
No.
I'm really zeroing in on the boring details here, the A3 and the code for what you're meant to do in the car. Anyway, they're shagging on the back seats. He's loving it. And then their next hookup, Shalimar and John sneak into none other than Wayne Bridges' house. So John and Wayne are best mates at this point, and they live a few doors down from each other in Cobham near Chelsea's training ground. And John obviously needs a place to go, can't bring her around to his gaff, can't go for a dog walk in Buckinghamshire. So him and Shalimar go into Wayne Bridges' house. I guess he's got a key or something. And apparently they just like get naked downstairs, go upstairs, and they're shagging when suddenly they hear Wayne Bridges' car on the gravel. And they run downstairs naked to grab all the clothes. But Wayne and his girlfriend come in. And she says, Wayne didn't exactly look thrilled when he saw our underwear scattered on his sofa downstairs.
A sign of things to come.
Yeah. So I don't know if Wayne and John have an agreement that John can do that. Or if he just like gave him his key for emergencies and then John's just...
Just to feed the cat when he's away. Yeah.
Feed the cat.
This wasn't what I meant.
But anyway, apparently Wayne's pretty pissed off anyway. And I don't know what his girlfriend thinks. And I don't know if his girlfriend is none other than Vanessa Peroncel, who we'll come on to. I was looking at the timeline.
I think it must be, because they were together for a long time. They were together for 5 years.
They started going out in 2005, which is this era. So I think it might have been, but I don't know for sure. And we'll talk about her later, and Wayne Bridge, of course. Okay. Yeah. Number four, or number two, I can't remember if I was counting up or down, favourite Kiss and Tell, is 17-year-old Jenny Barker. Her and her mate asked John for an autograph. He's in his car. He sort of leans out the window. And she says, he told us if we gave him our addresses, he would send us photos of himself. Which sounds so seedy. To a teenager as well. Anyway, I put this in just because she says he was trying to have a threesome with them, but it's only her who comes and meets up with him. They meet up in his Bentley and he puts on Luther Vandross, which is quite romantic.
I thought. Never too much.
Yeah, it's quite like old school romance, but then they shag in his Bentley, which I don't think is quite
not quite so old school.
It's not quite the Luther Vandross vibe, is it? And then the final Kiss and Tell is Leanne Johnson. And this is my favourite because she is on crutches with a broken leg and they're in a nightclub. And I just picked it because this was the tabloid headline. Terry's hobble on the jobble. Crocked beauty reveals how Ace went out on a limb for romp in a club loo. I just love that they call her Crocked Beauty. Like she's a striker or something. Yeah. Crocked Ace.
Would it hobble on the jobble?
Yeah. It's like sort of mixing puns up quite nicely. And Leanne says, it was very hard to balance with my broken leg and I was having to lean against the sides of the cubicle. Which I'm not surprised. That's quite a feat. You need good core strength for that.
Yeah.
Credit to her. So those Kiss and Tells all happen within the space of about 9 to 12 months, I think. They're just like every few weeks there's one. And every time Terry comes out and says like, yeah, I was an idiot. Biggest mistake I've ever made. Couldn't face losing Tony, my girlfriend and future wife. But like those days are behind me. I've seen sense now. And then just like another story comes around.
How is she still taking this?
Well, she loves him, Zach. And I think he's very charming.
Yeah, he must be.
They get married around this time, not long after. So she obviously believes him.
Is it one of these, we need to get married or...
Yeah, break up.
Break up.
It's Jermaine Pennant thing where she says, I'm leaving you or propose to me. And yeah. then he proposes to her at her like brother's grave or something yeah. really weird. Yeah, this is the Jermaine Pennant episode for that full story. It is good. But there is this thing in some of these relationships where they think if he proposes, then he'll stop. Mm. I don't know. And in fairness to John, he does actually seem to stop around this time, or at least the kiss and tell stories dry up. There are no more after that wild 2004-05 season. Instead, another member of the Terry clan picks up the baton, and that is John's mum, Sue. So England go to the 2006 World Cup. It's
Sue Terry.
Weren't expecting that, were you? I don't know what the biggest surprise angle here has been so far. Zach launching into talking about 9/11 or yeah. Sue Terry picking up the baton. But England go to the 2006 World Cup. It's obviously a really disappointing campaign, but there's more sort of heartbreak, I guess, for John when England come back, because rumours start to circulate that during the World Cup, John's mum, Sue, copped off with Jamie Carragher's brother in a hotel.
Really?
Yeah, so look, it is a rumour. It was in Pot Bitch, and it's a massive rumour on the terraces. Have you ever seen those like banners that Liverpool fans do so, along the lines of John Terry's mum loves a bit of Scouse, stuff like that?
Never
There's
seen
a
that.
Song as well. I can't remember how it goes.
I really want this one to be true.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, it's a rumour at the time. But
because you saw, I sent it to you, you know, the porno that came out that was apparently John Terry's mum.
Really? Yeah, there's a porn star who it's looks
just,
a lot like
it. It's just, at the time, it was like... Oh.
How did you come across this?
research
and the travels. Yeah. Oh, I remember it. It was yeah. like in the papers. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It turned out to be a porn star, but it does look a lot like yeah, John
poor,
Terry's
poor
mum.
Sue. Anyway, she may have got with Jamie Carragher's brother, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. His parents yeah. were split up. It wasn't. There's yeah, no cheating yeah, yeah. involved. I don't think anyone's done anything.
I mean, Baden-Baden was a wild place. It was. In wild
it was. People lost their head there, didn't they? We're actually plotting a special pod from Baden-Baden during the Euros.
Happy to come down, lads.
Quick trip to German spa town. Anyway, yeah, I don't know if the Sue story is true, but the rumour was really going around. I can't imagine John loved it. But the pain of that and England's World Cup exit is soothed soon after, because John is named England captain after England got the World Cup. This is under Steve McLaren. So it's not a totally happy era for England fans. They failed to qualify for Euro 2008. Do you remember there's that game in Russia where they lose? England are like coasting the group at this point, but then they lose in Russia and it all falls apart from there. Mm. And actually, an interesting story from that Russia game. So after it, the players are fucking miserable. They just want to get home and their plane is stuck on the tarmac for like hours. I don't know, there's some issue with air traffic control. And Michael Owen tells the story in his book. He says, suddenly John Terry turned from the row behind me and said, I'll phone Roman Abramovich. John got his phone out and phoned Roman, and he just said, Roman, we're stuck in the plane queue at the airport. They're saying we could be angels. Any chance of sorting it? I kid you not, within 3 minutes of John ending the call, the plane engine started and we began to move. We overtook all the planes and they just took off and left. Pulled a few strings.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you believe that or do you think it was a coincidence?
I mean, he was one of the most powerful men in Russia.
Yeah, he clearly, yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised.
Does he just have a hotline to... The airport.
Who, Roman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Roman can call the aviation minister who calls the airport kind of thing. Yeah. And John had a line into Roman, right, JP? Yeah. We were talking about this a bit before. Like, he had an in with most of the managers, but he always had a direct line to Roman as well, didn't he?
Yeah, apparently when he was renegotiating his contract with Chelsea, he said to Roman, like, what is your... This was when he did the big contract when he got onto, like, 250 a week. He said to Roman, you know, what is your plans for the club? Are you here long term? Like, he was that influential. Mm. And he had that bigger relationship with Roman. It was
so he probably, you know, when there were stories of like managers getting sacked because they lost the players. Do you think that would be John having a word with Roman?
Yeah,
maybe?
John and Frank probably.
Right. Yeah.
So when Jose Mourinho first came to the club, there was a bit of a power struggle between John and Jose. So John likes his porridge sloppy, and Jose likes his a little bit dry. And apparently one day in the canteen, it was about 3 weeks after Jose had started, Jose goes up to the head chef and says, this fucking porridge needs to go, it's too sloppy. And John gets wind of it and they have like an absolute standoff in the middle of the canteen really? About which porridge texture the head chef should go with. And it ends up that there were two porridges for the entirety of the time that Jose was there. One dry one for Jose, and then there was John's sloppy one as well.
Okay.
But apparently the context of the story when I read it was basically, it was about how Jose was just so every part of the training and the club and every player, he was so like strict about everything. He wanted to control everything. And John was also like that. So apparently they clashed a lot.
I love that their whole power struggle came to a head over
porridge.
Toppy porridge.
Sort of like proxy war.
Just had two porridges. That's what I did.
Not like three bears, that story.
Yeah, basically, Jose got to one bowl of porridge and it was too hot. The next one was too cold. And the third one was, it was just right.
You can imagine it though, they've got like Man City in the final or something at the weekend and they're rowing about the fucking porridge.
Yeah. But so they ended up with two different
There's two different textures.
So then, was it like when the other players came in, you sort of, is Mourinho keeping an eye on who takes his porridge?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
If you want to get in Mourinho's good books, then go for your dry, stodgy batter.
Get it down with a glass of water. Yeah.
I mean, I hate sloppy porridge. I'd be with Jose.
I'm between.
I'm more with Terry.
I bet you are.
Yeah, I don't want dry.
You old dog.
Just don't like having to chew it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So JP, I know you've been quite hungry for a bit of football content here. So I'll take you back to Moscow 2008. Bastards. It's a Champions League final. Chelsea are playing Manchester United. It's a 1-1 draw and the game goes to penalties. And do you want to tell us what happened next?
We lost 6-5 on penalties.
John missed, didn't he?
He did.
He hit the post.
Okay, yeah. Fun fact, pop quiz.
I know what the question's going to be.
Who missed the penalty for Manchester United?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Whoa.
Yeah. And cries loads. Do you remember how much he cries?
I do, yeah.
He cries after Terry misses and United win. Everyone's celebrating and Ronaldo's just crying.
Okay, one more pop quiz question then. Who got sent off for Chelsea that night?
Ooh.
Don't know.
Mikel? Oh, was it Drogba?
Didier Drogba slapped Vidic in the 94th minute.
Do you think you would have
sent off? Okay,
you would have won an extra time if
so
he hadn't.
This was the other bit. So Drogba was due to be the fifth penalty taker. It wasn't John.
Oh, really?
So if he hadn't got sent off, he would have taken the penalty.
Is Terry any good at penalties?
Yeah, he does take a few penalties, and apparently he said he always wears massive studs because obviously he just wants to cripple everyone he plays with. But it was just very unusual that he slipped.
Yeah, I was once the season after Gerrard slipped and Liverpool lost the title. I was in Liverpool in a taxi, and we were taking the piss out of the driver for Gerrard. We were like singing the Steve Gerrard slipping song. Yeah. And then the driver just goes, to be fair, name a player who hasn't slipped.
Fair point. But
yeah, I mean, yeah. Everyone slipped.
The circumstances make it slightly more memorable.
Yeah, that was a tough moment then for poor John. Low point of his career, footballing wise.
Yeah, I think he says that as well. It was probably the lowest point.
Do you reckon if he could take back all his cheating or take back that slipping?
Cheating is in
cheating on his wife.
Yeah, or the slip.
Yeah, of all his scandals or all his low points, do you think? I reckon he would take that back over any of the stuff in his personal life.
I guess it depends whether he cares about his legacy or his relationship.
Well, I just think he just wanted to win the Champions League then.
Yeah, big time. I think if he'd have ended his career without the Champions League, it would have left a big mark on his career.
In a way, he did. But anyway, we'll get into that. We'll get into that in a bit.
Well, yeah. But while Terry is in tears in Moscow, there's more trouble brewing back at home because his dad is caught supplying cocaine to an undercover News of the World journalist. So this was basically, it was a massive stitch up, really. So this undercover reporter befriended Ted Terry in a local wine bar that he was at all the time. And over the course of about 6 weeks, they became quite good friends. And he eventually asked him, like, I'm looking for some coke. Like, my boss wants it. Would you be able to sort it out for us? And Ted's like, yeah, okay. Like, I know a guy who can get that for you. So eventually they're in the wine bar one evening, and Ted Terry pops off, comes back 15 minutes later with 3.5 grams of gear, and they exchange the cash in the toilets, and he gives him this coke. And the next day it's exposed in the News of the World. Ted Terry is, he's arrested and eventually given, a 6-month suspended sentence and community service. But the judge says in the hearing, like, this is a clear case of entrapment.
I was about to say,
it was a complete stitch up. Yeah.
Also befriending him for 6 weeks.
Yeah. It's really...
Also, my memory of that story, really hazy one, was that he was like dealing on the regular, because that's obviously how it was presented.
No, I think it was just a one-off. Who he thought was his mate, was like, do you mind picking up some coke for me?
Fucking hell. Do you imagine how paranoid you'd be after that happening to you?
Yeah. And the saddest part of
this... Do you reckon he put a margin on the coke as well?
He did. He did. So he asked for an extra 40 quid for sorting it out.
For his troubles.
Bearing in mind that your son's on 170 grand a week.
So you need some new flip-flops, mate.
Yeah. Saddest part of this, though, is that Ted Terry then got barred from the wine bar.
No!
His favourite wine bar.
Oh,
that's such a stitch up.
Tragic victims caught in the crossfire of... Tabloids off
the leash.
Yeah.
It's a corker.
Yeah. But despite all of these indiscretions, there's another unexpected endorsement of Terry's character when he's named 2009's Dad of the Year. So I should say this isn't an actual proper award. It's actually a marketing ploy for Daddy's Brown Sauce.
it's still a vote, though, isn't it? It's a public vote.
It is a vote. And I think when you've been caught in 8 kiss and tells in 2 years, then...
Whatever happened to Daddy's?
It's still available.
The ketchup. About the ketchup.
I haven't seen it in ages.
They do ketchup and brown sauce.
Did they?
I've not seen it on the shelf for ages.
Yeah. I haven't seen it in ages.
You see it in like CAF sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, I only ever see HP these days. Yeah. Anyway, we digress. Go on.
Somebody tells me Terry would have had a hard time defending his Best Dad award, because the following year, in 2010, tabloids announced an alleged affair with Wayne Bridges' wife, Vanessa Perencel. So the build-up to this was that for the 2 weeks previously, there'd been this story going around that a unnamed Premier League star had taken out a gagging order against the press. So everyone's sort of speculating about what the story could be, who might be involved. And I think the fact that there is this gagging order really implies guilt, really. And we'll discuss, I think, whether or not that's true. But eventually the judge lifts this gagging order, and the papers have an absolute field day the next day. So the claim is that John Terry had been sneaking over to Vanessa Perencel's house for sex twice a week.
So Wayne Bridges' girlfriend.
She's Wayne Bridges' ex-girlfriend and John Terry's neighbour. So the News of the World calls her the brazen brunette. The Daily Mail calls her a woman of truly voracious ambition. And the Mirror says, Vanessa Perencel is a she-devil in John Terry's dirty game.
Jesus. So fucking hell.
It's really, she comes out terribly from this. She's really, I mean... I think this is classic tabloid sexism, really, just like really vilifying the woman in this. And
John, I presume.
And John as well. But Vanessa is, they really, really go for, I think, to be honest, I think the situation is that they want to go for Terry hard. And in order to justify them also really putting her through such a hard time and dragging her name through the mud, they need to paint her as this like... Yeah. You know, like conniving, she-devil temptress that's...
if she's a bit of an innocent victim, then they can't just keep doing it.
Exactly, yeah. So they also accuse her, without evidence, of sleeping with 7 different Chelsea players. So one newspaper puts up a picture of the Chelsea squad with red circles around each of the players, and they say, like, by the weekend, she might have a full 11 aside.
There's no evidence for that.
There's no evidence, no. They also say that John Terry got her pregnant and that she had an abortion, also without evidence. But there's this huge like media pylon. Everybody's moralizing about the issue. A lot of it centers around John Terry's friendship with Wayne Bridge, because like we said before, they were best mates. John Terry had keys to her house, so see whether...
apparently the relationship started with betting. They bet a lot together.
Yeah.
Okay. Him, John, and Scott Parker.
10 grand a week sort of thing.
Yeah.
Isha bookies, I think.
Yeah. Always on the horses as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then they had to stop, right, because they got outed in the tabloids.
There's nothing like a true gambling friendship.
Yeah.
When you've both got your week's wages on the line.
Throw it all together.
So this whole story, I think it is like a massive invasion of their privacy. And, you know, we talked before about how it's quite like problematic the way they portray the characters in this story, especially Vanessa. But aside from all that, I think this whole story is bollocks. I think it's another tabloid stitch up. So what
I agree
is, you, yeah, you would.
I know.
You
get your Team Terry t-shirts out.
That's a go in. No, you're gone.
Yeah. So what I don't think is really ever reported, I certainly didn't remember this from the story at the time, is that Vanessa always denied that anything had happened. Mm. And John Terry did as well. So all of the sources that corroborated this story were classic tabloid close friends. A close friend of Vanessa says this, but they're all anonymous. There's no way of backing it up.
They hacked her phone, didn't they? They were doing her phone, and she thinks they hacked her live phone call, which no one's ever been able to prove.
Oh, really?
But would be like a more damning thing for the news of the world. But there were like conversations from her voicemail verbatim reported in the press, which is pretty common with phone hacking stories.
So has she ever come out and said that this is complete bollocks?
Yeah, she did an interview with The Observer about 6 months after this whole thing came out. Basically, she talked about her side of the story and that she decided to keep quiet. And because what the tabloids would have loved is for her to come out. They'd have paid her a shed load of money to come out, tell her side of the story.
Yeah.
And if she'd wanted to make some sort of celebrity career out of this, then she could have done that. And it would have helped if the affair was true, probably. It would have made a big, there'd been more of a story to it. But she says that she was advised to just keep her mouth shut.
Yeah, by Max Clifford. Max Clifford was her spokesman for it. She hired him. And I think he played it terribly, because he told her to keep her mouth shut. And like, there was a bit when the abortion story broke, said that, I think it was the Mail said that she'd had an abortion with Terry's kid. They quote, you can see in the story, it's like, we rang Max Clifford and he just said no comment. And it's like, obviously you should have just trashed that story and been like, that's utter bollocks. Mm. And we'll sue, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Weird.
But anyway, I think the fact that she didn't come out and tell her side of the story sort of gave the tabloids a little bit of a free rein to just speculate whatever they wanted about her. But she later does this interview with The Observer where she comes out and she talks a lot about how this story impacted her and also tells her side of the story. So she says that her and Terry were just really good friends. And we know already that her and when she was together with Wayne Bridge, her and John Terry and his wife used to spend a lot of time together. They go on holiday, whatever. So they were close friends. And then after Wayne Bridge moved to Man City, they tried to make it work for a while. It didn't work out. And they split up and she moved back to London. And at that point, she lives around the corner from John Terry and his wife. And Terry would come round quite often just to see how she was. He knew that she wasn't doing so well. And she says that Terry was actually trying to help her get back with Wayne. So then the story comes from a News of the World journalist was hanging around on their street and basically saw Terry coming in and out of her house multiple times and put two and two together, probably not helped by Terry's track record.
Yeah, love just that there's a News of the World journalist just loitering on the street.
Yeah,
I'm guessing again they hacked the phones. There were voicemails from John being like, I'm coming round. So then they went and watched.
Yeah.
She says that the first she heard of it was, she got a phone call from Wayne Bridge saying, there's a journalist outside my door. He says that you're having an affair with one of my Chelsea teammates. And she was like, what? What are you on about? And then he came back and was like, yeah, he says it's John Terry. And she's like, what the f-? Like, nothing has ever happened between me and John. We're just friends. But yeah.
The shit the press used to get away with is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I absolutely hate you fuckers.
Yeah.
What do you mean you?
You fucking journalist.
This is a podcast, Jake. Hang on. So Vanessa does eventually get an apology out of the tabloids, doesn't she?
She does. So eventually, a few months later, the tabloids bury somewhere in their back pages this apology that reads, On January 31st, we published some personal information about Vanessa Perencel concerning an alleged affair with the footballer John Terry. We have since been informed she would have preferred this to remain private, and it was untrue in any case. We apologise to Miss Perencel for any distress caused.
Oh, you wanted, to say that? Yeah. You should have said. Oh, that was a secret. Oh,
we really apologise, yeah. And it was untrue in any case.
I think they've left themselves leeway in the wording there. I mean, her lawyers probably would have written it, but the leeway there is they can say, we were informed it was untrue, which is a bit like her saying, she denies it. But I mean, yeah. She would have preferred it to remain private.
Of course you fucking would.
What, to remain private? It never happened.
Yeah.
So do you think that John Terry slept with Wayne Bridge's girlfriend?
I think he's done quite a lot wrong in his career from a personal perspective, but I actually don't think he...
Yeah, I believe her.
I agree. I think, yeah, he's had many indiscretions, but I think this
hiccups.
One...
Hiccups.
We all make mistakes. Yeah, no,
we all make mistakes on Junction 9 and the M25. I think this was a complete stitch up. I also think that because Terry had come out and got this gagging order, A, it makes him look really guilty, which he isn't necessarily, and I don't think he is. But also, I think it gave the tabloids a reason to want revenge against him because there's nothing they hate more than a gagging order when they've got a big story in
there. There was also a lot of chat being like, fighting gagging orders is in itself like good for fucking democracy and stuff. So we're doing the right thing here just by fighting it. He really, I agree, the real fuck up was the gagging order, the super injunction.
Why do you think he was so motivated to get the gagging order then?
I think his lawyers were just like, that was this. They were just like, we'll do whatever. If a story comes up, we'll just squash it. And super injunctions were really effective.
Yeah.
You can't even say who's got it. Mm. And I don't know, I doubt he made the call.
Are they infinite as well? Once you got it in, it's...
I guess you can, maybe the experiment. I actually don't know. Is there any more to say on the Wayne Bridge
thing?
The fallout.
So the fallout of this drags on for a really long time. There's obviously this famous incident when Man City play Chelsea and Wayne refuses to shake John Terry's hand.
That really added fuel to the flames, didn't it? Because it just obviously makes John... Well, it makes it look like Wayne doesn't think that John is guilty.
And yeah. Apparently they still don't speak.
Really?
And they live pretty near each other these days.
I think it probably didn't help when Wayne Bridge came home to find John Terry running naked down the stairs with another woman.
So he's already got a bit of a...
I know your type.
Still though, Wayne Bridge has obviously decided, I don't know, or maybe he just doesn't like him anyway. Yeah. I have read somewhere Wayne Bridge saying something like, people still don't know the full story. So maybe although they weren't getting together, he felt betrayed by John taking her side. I don't know, they don't like each other.
Yeah.
So I remember him not shaking his hand. It was like, everyone was like, will they shake hands? Will they shake hands? Watched it live. It was great. So what happened? Okay, what else happened in the fallout?
So Terry is also stripped of the England captaincy.
I mean, if Terry was generally not guilty, I mean, what a thing to have taken away from you if you generally hadn't done anything wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose so. Although I also think he's sort of done lots of other stuff wrong and got away with it.
Well, he does have it reinstated.
When did he get it taken off?
2010.
Right.
So, yeah, the year of the Wayne Bridge scandal. And then the following year, he has it reinstated.
Right.
Not for very long, because there's another really nasty scandal coming. So October 2011, Chelsea are playing QPR. And after the game, John Terry is accused of shouting a racist slur at Anton Ferdinand. Lip readers corroborate this after the game. Anton Ferdinand actually doesn't accuse him of it. It's people pick up on it from TV footage afterwards. Right. Terry admits that he did say said slur, but that he was repeating it back to Anton Ferdinand. So he says that Anton Ferdinand had reported it to the ref, which I don't think happened. And he'd then said to Anton Ferdinand, did you say that I called you a... Terry's charged by the police for using racist language. He's then stripped of the England captaincy again. It goes to trial. He's cleared of criminal charges at a trial. But the FA then charge him with using abusive language with a reference to race. So he gets a four-match ban for that, which, you know, obviously there's
but it
so
was cleared
much,
in normal court.
He was cleared in a criminal court, but the FA then charge him with it. So
right. It's harder to convict in a
criminal court.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of questions around this, around whether were the FA taking this seriously enough. Luis Suarez obviously got an 8-match ban for his racist language incident. There was also, around the same time, a 5-match suspension given to a 14-year-old boy in Leeds who gave his name as Santa Claus after being sent off.
What, and Terry got 4?
Terry got a 4-match ban. This 14-year-old got a 5-match ban. So you can see where the FA's priorities are.
Yeah, you can see why people accuse them of not doing it. I think now they would give a year or something, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's a very messy, complicated case, I think.
Yeah, but if you believe that he did say it as an abusive thing, then it's like long ban.
Yeah.
Santa Claus.
Yeah. But yeah, it's very messy. Terry retires from England duty after the FA ban. He says that, you know, it's just kind of untenable, his position. So yeah, I don't know. It's a very messy episode altogether.
It is.
Unpleasant.
Also, the fact that Anton didn't directly accuse him, it had to be like after the match, which then got picked up and then
he got sent off for
in.
Something else, didn't he?
Yeah, but it wasn't that, was
no,
it?
No, he got sent off. Well, Terry always says the ref told me I was sent off for shoulder barging Ferdinand, and then afterwards
this came out.
Right? I don't know. Yeah. But I guess Anton Ferdinand didn't hear it himself. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moral of the story, just don't say racist things. Yeah, whether you're repeating it back or not.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to football. So in the midst of all this scandal, Chelsea have their successful Champions League run. Obviously, it doesn't go quite as John Terry would have dreamed it, because he's sent off in the semi-final against Barcelona. So he's suspended for the final when they beat Bayern Munich. It's quite a big upset. Obviously, there's this very famous incident at the end of the game when Chelsea go up to lift the trophy and John Terry whips off his tracksuit to reveal that he's wearing
he's got his
full kit
on,
including boots and shin pads on underneath.
You never know.
Well, you kind of do. Yeah, this is banned.
What's your take on that?
I felt it was probably a bit OTT, him doing that. And I think after we won the Champions League, I remember there was an absolute uproar that he did it, and it sort of overshadowed us winning.
It was so funny. People were like cutting him out and putting him in like famous scenes, like Nelson Mandela's election and stuff.
But he did, a couple of years later, I think it was on the Sky Sports programme, A League of Their Own, and Jamie Redknapp's on it, and he manages to get John on, and John comes on the show with the full kit. He's still got it.
That's really funny, actually. That's really
so he can take his piss out of himself for it.
That is good. That's the semi-final, the Barca semi-finals where Torres scores, right? And Gary Neville made that noise in commentary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Torres, literally Chelsea put everyone behind the ball.
Yes, and that we break.
So that's like the sort of near end of Terry's career, isn't it? I guess he got his Champions League, sort of. Do you think he's counting that?
Yes.
You know, you quite often read about players who are injured or suspended for finals and they're like, I couldn't really enjoy it and I don't really consider it one of my honours.
Roy Keane would probably be.
Roy Keane does that say bracket. That, doesn't he? About the
if he doesn't play, he's not won it.
He doesn't play. Roy Keane doesn't play in the 1999 Champions League final. And he says, I remember we covered it in the Roy Keane pod. He says, like, that was the worst experience for me in football. And, like, he doesn't really consider it one of his achievements.
Okay. So, I don't know. I think
you've contributed.
I think you could definitely count it. Like,
yeah.
John Terry was, I imagine, played every minute of their
qualifying
run up to that point. Yeah.
I mean, if Scott Carson's claiming 2 Champions League winning medals.
Yeah. If Ryan Bertrand can,
then I think John Terry can. Yeah. I personally would love to be suspended for the final, take all the pressure off.
Yeah.
Especially if I'd missed a penalty in a previous one.
True.
Yeah. Probably why I'm not a professional footballer. So anyway, they win that Champions League, and then he's sort of at this point reaching the autumn of his years, isn't he? The sort of end of his career.
Yeah, I think he got maybe 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
I don't think he retires till 2018.
Really? 2017. I've got it in my notes.
Yeah.
Oh, so he still had 5 years with us.
Yeah. And he has a good few seasons. I think you win the title again under Mourinho.
Yeah.
That's the whole like Eva Carneiro era. And then he goes to Villa for a little bit, Terry, doesn't he?
Did he play for Villa?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, one season.
One season.
Apparently, he obviously befriended Jack Grealish quite a lot, because Grealish says he told him to leave Villa and go to City.
Really?
So Villa fans are a bit like, fuck you, John, cheers. Anyway, he does hang up his boots.
Wasn't he assistant manager at Villa?
Yeah, he was.
This club will never go anywhere.
Birmingham's a shithole, isn't it?
Team player.
Yeah. He's come out and said he won't manage now, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, John. So, I mean, when he hangs up his boots, he does a bit of coaching. He flirts with punditry a bit. He probably doesn't do his punditry prospects many favours at the 2018 World Cup, because he turns on Portugal v Morocco and finds it's being commentated on by a female commentator. And he takes a photo of it and posts to his Instagram saying, having to watch this game with no volume. And obviously this leads to an inevitable backlash from people who know that he's basically saying he can't listen to a female commentator. But John has an explanation for this, and he fires out a quick thinking video explaining what he meant.
Returned home from holiday from the Maldives today around 2 o'clock. To find there's no audio in the house working whatsoever. Since then, they've been out to fix it. So everything's working again now. But I was watching the game with no volume, simply posted on my social media, and people have run away and kind of, you know, made up their own kind of stories and run with it. It's gathered a bit of momentum on social media and also in the newspapers as well. But just wanted to clarify, completely untrue and simply not the case. So I hope this clears up the matter.
No audio in the house, like it's milk or hot water. Yeah. Got no audio in the house.
Why does he have to tell everyone he's been to the Maldives as well?
To explain that he's just come back to discover. Right, a bit like when you come back and the boiler's broken. Yeah, the audio's gone all over the house.
Not again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Some of his explanations for things I'll buy, but I am not fucking buying that.
Yeah, okay.
No way. He was saying it because he doesn't want to listen to a female commentator. And to be fair, his defense wasn't helped when his pal Joey Barton waded in and slightly stitched him up by saying, John said what we were all thinking. So yeah, that's he's never really done much punditry. I don't know.
When Joey Barton says that you've said what we're all thinking, then you
know, and they are mates. I've seen them sort of interacting a bit on Twitter, haven't they? I think they're probably quite aligned on a few things.
He is doing bits for the Chelsea Academy.
Yeah, he's coaching.
He's in like three or four.
We talked on our Extra Shot podcast recently about how John did an Insta post explaining that he goes around the training ground turning all the plugs off because he doesn't want any red showing in the training ground. He said, I've done this as a player as well. So yeah, he's sort of like in there encouraging the next wave of like zealous youngsters. But don't worry about him for cash. He's doing all right because he's got a few nice little earners on the go. During the crypto boom of 2022, John got in on the action by releasing the Ape Kids Football Club NFTs. He was officially the head coach of what he described as a collection of baby monkeys, where the idea is, in a magical world where apes ruled the universe, a magical thousand-year-old tree sprouted cute baby apes, which inexplicably also play football. And he gets a few mates in on it, like Jack Wilshere tweets being like, cheers for this, JT, excited to see where the blockchain goes.
Do you think Jack Wilshere knows what blockchain is?
Well, he's been brushing up, mate. He's done his research. Initially, they're selling for about 500 quid. Since then, they've tanked 99%. Like currently, you can pick one up for £4.70.
Should we get some?
Yeah, I think it's worth getting one. You never know.
One for your desktop screensaver.
Yeah.
The magical world where apes rule the metaverse. Is that just like some bloke comes to John and is just like, slap your name on this, mate, do a few tweets? Do you think he's really into the potential of the metaverse?
He got in trouble with the Premier League as well because one of his apes was holding a Premier League trophy.
I saw that, yeah.
Love it. He gets in more trouble with a more serious authority than the Premier League, though, because the FBI release an EFIT. Their cyber detectives release an EFIT of a man wanted in connection with a multi-million dollar NFT fraud. And they say, this man is believed to be in his early 40s and possibly lives in the UK. And the EFIT is the spitting image of John Terry.
I mean, it is John, isn't it?
We're looking at it now. I'll put a link in the show notes. That is John Terry. Yeah.
Jesus.
I think it's a coincidence. I don't think he actually committed a fraud, I should say. But
That's surely too much of a coincidence. Multi-billion dollar NFT.
It is literally a coincidence because I'm pretty sure John Terry is not wanted by the FBI for his apes. That's amazing. Anyway, the crypto boom obviously turns to crypto bust and John doesn't get his dream of ruling the metaverse. His magical world does not come to fruition. But these days, he's got other money-making schemes. He did a one-man tour last year where fans can pay £250 for a photo and autograph, or £500 to eat dinner with the man himself.
Mm, bargain.
Yeah. And in fairness, not all of his schemes are just about making money. In 2021, he ran a raffle offering signed captain's armbands to two lucky winners, chosen at random from thousands of entrants. And the winners were the lovely Faye and Yasmin Elizabeth, who were just looking at... John posted screenshots of their profiles. They're fit girls. He posted pictures of their profiles saying, "Congratulations, please forward your address to receive your armband."
I'll drop it around myself.
Yeah. I'm actually in the Buckinghamshire area. Do you live local? I'll bring the dog. I weirdly quite like this side of
live local.
Quite like this side of him where he's doing these like little earners, because he must have a lot of cash, but he's just doing all these like weird little competitions. Maybe that armband one was for charity, actually.
Yeah,
he strikes me as the type of guy that if he wasn't playing professional football, he would be selling fruit and veg. He'd have microwaves for sale in his house. You know, he's just a bit of a wheeler and dealer.
And knock off Rolexes.
Off Rolexes and all that. Yeah.
And a bit of a shagger as well.
Yeah.
Although he's still with the lovely Tony, happily married.
So. Yes, I see a lot of their Instagram content.
Yeah, just, they've got a massive picture in their sitting room that just says, "Fuck dancing, let's fuck." It's like in the style of like a Penguin classic book. It's bizarre. All right. Well, I think that's probably all there is to say. JP, thanks for coming and defending him. Someone had to. Everyone deserves a fair defence.
I think so too.
And you did a sterling job.
Appreciate you having me on again, fellas.
And Zach, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Please do share this one with your mates and give us a good review if you've got time. Thanks a lot for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.